Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Our interview today is sponsored by a hidden gem in Starkville, Mississippi, Alora Modern Wellness. Founded by healthcare veterans Rich and Lisa Lopez, Alora offers cutting-edge therapies like whole-body cryotherapy, infrared saunas, LED light treatments, and assisted stretching, all designed to relieve pain, reduce stress, and boost recovery. Whether you're an athlete, a busy professional, or simply seeking balance, Alora provides personalized care in a serene setting. Located at 821 C Highway 12 across from Kroger, it's your local destination for modern wellness. Discover more at aloramodernwellness.com. We are 12 weeks from the start of the college football season. There are 12 games in the college football season. It is time to start opponent previews here on Thunder and Lightning, and as we always have, we start at the end, which means we are talking about the Egg Bowl with Michael Borky, my co-host on Sports Talk Mississippi, and a damn fine American, if I do say so myself. Let's talk about this Ole Miss team. Let's start at what's not back for the Rebels. We all know Trinidad Chambliss and Kewan Lacy. We know the pieces that are back on defense. What does this team not have that it had a year ago other than Lane Kiffin?
Right now, anyway, I think that the biggest loss could be a Dejon Stribling. Now, you have mixed in Deuce Alexander. That was a big returner at wide receiver. They've portaled that position, they seem to think, pretty well. I mean, the number two portal class has a bunch of good players in it. Imagine that. But by the end of the season, Dejon Stribling was just outstanding. And he, in particular, in the Sugar Bowl was really good. And there's a reason that he was the number 33 pick in the draft. You know, people are talking about Prince Will and others. Stribling is somebody that's not getting talked about as a guy that this team might miss. And I think that they are going to miss him. There was so much saga around Ole Miss at the end of last season. And then all of the player retention, there wasn't enough talked about, hey, this guy was a stud by the end of the season, and he's no longer there. He's going to be with the 49ers. So that's an underrated loss for this team, is Stribling at wide receiver.
That being said, if we're talking about Ole Miss this season, if we're just talking about one wide receiver, it feels like that's, you know, what you're saying by not saying anything is that this offense especially should not really miss a beat. That's going to be the real question mark, though. New head coach, new offensive coordinator. It's the same system, but you know as well as I do that every coach has their own tweaks and things that they want to do. What's going to be different about things under Baker that were happening under Weiss and Kiffin?
Yeah, the same but different, yeah. I guess would be the best way to describe it. John David Baker himself said it's about 80% the same. I think you're going to see more two tight end sets.
State fans are like, I hope that 20% was the scoring touchdown part.
But that is a part of the field where I think you might see some differences. When it comes to goal-to-go red zone type situations, I think you are going to see a little bit more size, maybe things closer in tight as opposed to still going for wide receivers, things like that. I think you might see a little bit. The most offensive variation, I think, is going to come in red zone or goal-to-go situations. And you're exactly right. I mean, he's a guy from the Kiffin tree. I would be a lot more concerned if they had just promoted from within as opposed to a guy that went out for 2 years, did it under a defensive-minded head coach on his own, and then came back. But yeah, that is the huge question mark. And then the tackle position as well. I mentioned Stribling. I was probably a little dismissive of that spot. Now, I guess you go on Cole Kublik's show a good bit. He has said that this offense really protects specifically the tackles, mm-hmm. that it allows you to not have to have an elite tackle.
There's not a lot of 5 second drops, you know, 7 step drops happening in this offense.
Yeah, but they're still replacing both of those guys. And right now, I mean, Terrez Davis, apparently they really, really like. He's been in the program, he transferred from Maryland. But the other side, I mean, Kern has an offseason arrest. Now, I guess all the meaningful charges got dropped, but he didn't show up in the spring the way that they were hoping he would either. The talent ceiling is super high, but his Ole Miss career has not gotten off to the start that anybody was hoping that it would, both with his, you know, the shape that he was in on the field. And then, they had the meet the team day. And then a few hours later, he's driving 100 miles per hour in Arkansas. It's like, you know, that little things like that they need to figure out, because the right tackle position between he and Kinsler, I mean, there's a chance that they spread Kudus out there to play tackle. They're trying to figure that spot out, it seems. But that is another one, to go back to your first question, that you need to keep an eye on is that position. One tackle's locked down, but the other one, it's not as not as good as Ole Miss fans are hoping, at least through the spring anyway.
Another offensive question I have, you know, since Kiffin arrived, the tight end has been a bonus position for the Ole Miss Rebels. They have had great play there, Kenny Yeboah and Caden Priestcorn, and last year with Daquan Wright. Who is ready to fill that role and be that guy? I talk about this offense all the time, where when it's humming, you'll have balls get thrown to the tight end, and there's nobody on your television screen except for the tight end. He's just wide open. Who's going to fill that role for the Rebels this year?
So Luke Haz is the guy that is most likely just to slip right in and be that guy. He was an Arkansas transfer, got hurt in training camp last year, so he didn't get to play a whole lot. And then Daquan Wright did his thing. Did score the touchdown in the Sugar Bowl, though. Between he and Caleb Odom, there is a lot of, I say a lot, but there is experience there in the tight end room. One thing that needs to happen, though, is Caleb Odom needs to catch the football more consistently. In terms of physical tools, I mean, he has got everything you want. I mean, he's built so he's not Evan Engram. I'm only making this body type comparison, not the player comparison.
Right.
But he's built like a longer Evan Engram. That's what he physically looks like. And he was a five-star wide receiver out of high school.
Right.
And you can see the physical traits on him to be that. The hands have got to get a little bit more consistent, but he did play the position pretty well last year. It's going to be those two guys, by and large. And then Michael Smith was a transfer from South Carolina that they seem to like as well. But I think the first two. Also, I don't know if you knew this. There is a Priestcorn in the tight end room.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But we got rid of him.
Brady Priestcorn, his younger brother, who transferred in from Michigan also. But yeah, it's Haz and Odom. Those are the two guys at tight end. Haz with a ton of experience, obviously, from Arkansas.
And then, of course, the big two names on offense, Kewon Lacy and Trinidad Chambliss. You're talking about, for sure, a first-team All-SEC preseason running back, because they vote for two. He'll definitely be somebody. I'm going to vote for him. Chambliss, it's between him and Arch, probably, for first-team quarterback. What's another level they can achieve this year?
You know, what's interesting is Kewon Lacy is not going to be a first-round pick, but certainly a candidate to be a first-round pick. I think they're going to use him less. I've said this to you on the radio show before, but there were times last season where they were not smart with his usage in games that they had control of. And it's what got Henry Parrish hurt. They're beating Arkansas by four touchdowns, and Henry Parrish is still in the game, and he suffers a gruesome injury in 24. And then you guys know the rest. Even the State fans listening know what happened after Henry Parrish got hurt in 2024. They did some of that last year. They just got away with it because Kewon Lacy got hurt. I think they're going to be more efficient with his usage this year. You might not see the same volume of carries because he's not going to get snaps in the fourth quarter of a game in which they're winning by four touchdowns like he did last year. I think you're going to see a heavy dose of Shekhi Mills-Knight, Makai Frazier, the transfer in from Michigan State. I think you might see a little bit more of a running back rotation. Now, every meaningful carry is going to go to Lacy, but I would not be surprised if his usage rate is actually down this season, that they want to protect him a little bit better. I've heard that from talking to people, that there's – it's a double – not a double-edged sword. There's two reasons for it. One, they want to protect him for the meaningful games, but also they want to protect him for the NFL too. And so that I think, might happen. In terms of Chambliss, the next step for him, what next step can he take? That's my question, is how much better can a guy play than he did in the Sugar Bowl, for example? That was borderline a perfect performance from a quarterback. I think there's been some arm angle adjustments. One thing that was really a knock on his game was the ball gets batted down at the line of scrimmage a good bit. Some of that is height related, but I mean, he's taller than Drew Brees, and Drew Brees didn't really have that problem. There was some arm angle stuff. If you look at some pictures from the spring, it looks like his release point is higher. And that's something that they need to work on. But the biggest thing for him is this team is yours now. This offense is yours now. And it ended up being that by the end of last season anyway. But how is he going to handle being the pressures of being the guy, the pressures of the money that has, you know, 10 times salary increase from last year to this year? Everybody on campus, everybody in town is telling him how great he is. And how is he going to mentally handle all of that stuff that comes with being the guy, as opposed to last year where he wasn't the guy? And then after he became it, they're already, you know, in the middle of the season, and Lane Kiffin spent 2 months still telling everybody that it's Austin Simmons' team, and when he's healthy, he's going to play. That's not the case anymore. So I think it's more, you know, outside pressure noise plus the arm angle stuff that you need to watch for with Trinidad this year, as opposed to anything physical. Because if he is the player that he was last year, he'll be invited to New York City probably.
So with this Ole Miss team, you know, what is the expectation level? Because it feels like the roster is – I've been saying this for all season. If Kiffin were still there, this would be a preseason top five team. No question about it. And they could – you can make a strong case they'd be second or third, to be totally honest with you. The question marks are completely around Pete Golding and what's he going to do in his first full season in charge. So what is a reasonable expectation for him this year? Is there going to be rumbling, I guess I should say, if he's not – back in the playoff?
It's not okay. So I'm about to say it's not fair, but that's not necessarily true. When you are fielding a roster that is this talented, I don't think that — we talked about this yesterday on the radio show, ironically.
Yeah.
I don't think that you are given a year one grace period. There's too much money in this roster. There's too much talent on it to say, well, you know, if they stay healthy and they go 8-4, it's just year one for coach. It's fine. No, I don't agree with that. I think the minimum expectation, barring relative health, for a roster this good should be when they're playing the Egg Bowl in the last game of the season, that game has playoff implications. If they go 9-3 and they play well and they just come up a spot or two short in the playoff, I'm not going to call it a disaster season. It's a 9-game conference schedule now. You know, it's a more difficult schedule in and of itself for Ole Miss than last year's was. They had 8 home games last year. It was just easier by every objective measure. Last year's schedule was easier than this year's schedule. But if they're not in that conversation going into Black Friday and they were healthy, then buyer's remorse is the only only honest reaction to the hiring of Pete Golding. If you can't win with this roster, you can't win.
So I guess my question would be this: how concerned are you about September 19th? And just in terms of, if they don't beat LSU, the emotion of that kind of pulling the rug out from underneath Ole Miss in this season, because they got to go to Florida the next week.
I would think that LSU can beat them. If LSU beats them once, they're going to beat them twice.
I think it's a fair thought.
Because
I saw it with State with Florida in 2018. You know, when Mullen, you know, they lost to Kentucky the week before, but then when Mullen came in and beat them, the season was just never the same, and you knew you weren't probably going to ever get that other shot at them. It's a little different because Ole Miss will play LSU every year, but
there's going to be so much and Pete Golding is saying all the right things and the players are saying all the right things. And I think that they're going to be able to play. If this was not Louisville, but Louisville Tech, if you will, in week one, I would be more concerned about them being distracted in the first couple of weeks of the season. But now they have something else to kind of divert their attention away from week three, because Louisville's good. Louisville can beat them. I think they're going to start the season ranked. So at least they have something to kind of take to pull their attention away and focus on something other than LSU. But, I mean, you know it, and everybody listening to this knows it. The amount of pressure that is on that team to win that game in particular. There's pressure in the LSU game every year.
Right.
There was pressure in the LSU game last year, and there was none of this crap. So they're going to hear about it. They're going to know about it. It's going to be everywhere. They won't be able to escape it. These are 85 guys that are on social media all day long. They're going to see it. Their classmates are going to tell them about it. they were coached by the guy, a lot of them. Not winning that game will, I mean, I guess you could look at 2014 and the Treadwell injury as a game where the vibes were just
sort of the same thing.
But it was less angry and more just emotional because of what happened.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
This will be, I mean, anger in a way that I don't know that you could ever think back and replicate a time in which there was that kind of response after this game. Lane Kiffin winning on that field will generate a reaction that I don't know how you overcome. It's going to be that intense.
So Mississippi State didn't have a lot of success against Lane Kiffin, shall we say. He won 5 out of the 6 Egg Bowls while he was the head coach at Ole Miss. Is that going to continue under Pete Golding this season? I feel like right now Ole Miss would probably be a 2-touchdown underdog. Oh, sorry, favorite. But at the same time,
if they're a 2-touchdown underdog, Pete Golding's getting fired at the end of this year.
Could be the situation there for sure. What does Mississippi State need? What is something that Mississippi State can do this year to narrow the gap with Ole Miss?
Lines of scrimmage. Lines of scrimmage. Ole Miss, that's one thing that they've done really well lately, especially on the defensive line. I mean, you've seen it. They are recruiting and portaling. I guess that also is recruiting. The lines of scrimmage really, really well. And that is something that State needs to get back to, because that used to be State. You know that. All of you listening know that. Mississippi State used to be where the defensive linemen went. And now that's Ole Miss. I mean, they have I've seen some projections now that had Will Echols inside of the top 15. Some people think that he's a single-digit draft pick upcoming. They've recruited that position really well. They've got depth there on the defensive line, and they portal it well. That's what State needs to do. Jeff Lebby's he's getting skill position guys. He's got a super high-ceiling quarterback. The running back room looks really good. But they struggle up front. And same thing on the defensive side of the ball. Now, Arnett, I think, is going to help. And, you know, there's a lot of raw talent, more so than last year, if you look at recruiting profiles. But that's the biggest difference between these two teams right now, I think, is the lines of scrimmage.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that 100%. Long way to go to the Egg Bowl, but it's never too early to talk about it. Michael Borky, okay. I'll see you in about 2 hours.
Sounds good.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.